And they were suggesting by giving the imam this analysis of their politics that men of God ought not to dirty themselves by getting involved in the dirty affair of politics. And that they ought to keep themselves clean by staying out of this domain. But thank Allah that this imam was not like his contemporaries. For many of them took this deal. This imam recognized that there is a clean politics and there is a dirty politics. And that clean politics and purifying this realm is what is essential to delivering justice and for taking care of the affairs of the oppressed. And so the imam rejected this offer. And when he had a chance, he went public with this rejection. Because in this instance, he felt that taqiyya is an act of cowardice. And so he said what Allah Ta'ala had said 1400 years before. أَلَمْ تَرَ إِلَى الَّذِينَ يَزْعُمُونَ أَنَّهُمْ آمَنُوا بِمَا أُنزِلَ إِلَيْكَ وَمَا أُنزِلَ مِنْ قَبْلِكَ يُرِيدُونَ أَنْ يَتَحَاكَمُوا إِلَى الطَّاغُوتِ وَقَدْ أُمِرُوا أَنْ يَكْفُرُوا بِهِ. Haven't you seen those who pretend that they are committed to the guidance that came to you, O Muhammad, and the guidance that came before you. They choose to cede the issue of governance and decision making to those who are tyrants, even though they have been told to cease and desist from that posture. And so we Muslims, we have a great regard for the imam, not because he was a great scholar, though as a scholar he was unrivaled. We have great regard for him, not because he was a philosopher, though as a philosopher, he had few equals. We have great regard for him, not because he was a great mystic, or because he excelled in Irfan. But he did excel in those areas. We have great regard for him not because he was courageous, because he was a man of unbridled courage. We have great regard for him not because he was a great father. He lost a son to the most ferocious security apparatus that the world had ever known. But we have great regard for him because he was a great leader, because he was a true imam. In this particular area of imama, of leadership, the Muslims of the world have a great suffering. It is in this particular area that we are lacking. The Muslims are in need of great leaders. The Muslims are in need of competent leaders. And the Muslims are in need of effective leaders. And so what is it that made Imam Khomeini an effective leader? What characteristics did he have that made him different from his contemporaries? And a persistent theme throughout this presentation will be to compare the leadership of this imam that we honor today with those of Islamic ambition and those of the Islamic movement that belong to this liberation that is taking place in the Arab world, the so-called Arab Spring. For when we take a look at the Imam, his personality, his commitment, his dedication, his effort, and his sacrifices for this ummah, and then we compare that to what we see of the liberation movements that are going on with regard to the Arab Spring, why can't we look at the Arab Spring, at these liberation movements, and point to an imam? But when we take a look at the Islamic Revolution, it is unmistakable for us to be able to point to that person which is the leader of that revolution and which is the imam of the ummah during that time. Imam Khomeini changed the course of history. Allah's Messenger changed the course of history. And if you are a representation of Allah's Messenger on earth, if you are a representation of the guidance that Allah's Messenger brought to humanity, if you follow in those footsteps, then you change the course of history. You bring a new light to the people of the world. Because of this imam, whether current historians recognize it or not, and whether they are willing to give him the credit or not, and by making the choice that he did, it was not enough to reject communism and capitalism. It was not enough to reject leftism and imperialism. He had to have a program. And this imam, he gave us Walayat al-Faqih. As we are saying, he didn't just deconstruct capitalism and communism. He didn't just reject other forms of oppression, other forms of administering the affairs of men. It was not enough to reject those things, to reject those ideologies without replacing them with something that is cognizant of human nature, with human nobility, with allowing humanity to achieve the most that it can achieve, to ennoble humanity with what ennobles it. And that is something which is based on Allah's guidance and the sunnah of His Messenger sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. And so this was a breakthrough, that those of Islamic ambition, those of Islamic character, are going to be able to administer the affairs of state. That is Walayat al-Faqih. Taking this new direction creates a sense of urgency. The Imam lived his entire life in a sense of urgency. Almost the moment that he came back to the people that he was leading from 15 years of exile, the moment that he returned, the first thing that he did is to connect the domestic oppression in his part of the world to the global abuse of power by a coalition of atheistic Christians, racist Jews, and sectarian Muslims. We recognize this to be imperialism, Zionism, and Anglo-Wahhabism. Anybody who mentions imperialism and Zionism and doesn't add Anglo-Wahhabism to the mix doesn't understand this Imam. Doesn't pay allegiance to this Imam. Anglo-Wahhabism is an outgrowth of imperialism and Zionism. It is an outgrowth of exclusivism and exceptionalism. يا أيها الذين آمنوا لا تتخذوا الكافرين أولياء من دون المؤمنين أتريدون أن تجعلوا لله عليكم سلطانا مبينا. Now this is an interesting ayah. O you who are securely committed to Allah, do not take the kafirs, those who deny Allah's power presence in your human affair, do not take them as your sponsors or as your allies. Do you want, listen to this second part. Pay attention, brothers and sisters, to this second part. Do you want Allah to impose upon you a maximalist dictatorship? No, you have enemies. If you want to be blind and you want to live in a world without enemies, then you're going to have dictatorships imposed upon you. Isn't that the situation in your world today? From Indonesia to Morocco? How many dictatorships can you count? يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا لَا تَتَّخِذُوا الْكَافِرِينَ أَوْلِيَاءَ مِنْ دُونِ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ Who are our awliya? When we need guidance, when we need to solve economic problems, where are we looking? When we need to solve political problems, where are we looking? When we need to solve environmental problems, who's providing the answers? Are we looking to Allah's book? Are we looking to this Imam? Are we looking to the Prophet? That's what awliya means. And when you choose kufr, imperialism, Zionism, Anglo-Wahhabism, when you choose these to be your awliya, expect a maximalist dictatorship to be imposed upon you. And because we've made that choice, that's what we have to deal with. We have enemies. According to one of these ayat, one of the most imposing of those enemies is the Zionist state of Israel. And this Imam, once again, he distinguished himself from those who claim to be leading liberation movements today. Those of the Islamic flavor who claim to be leading liberation movements today. This Imam said in one of his famous statements that this revolution is meaningless. Yes, this Imam is saying this revolution is meaningless unless it liberates Palestine, unless it liberates the Holy Land. And that has been an abiding feature of the Islamic Republic of Iran's foreign policy since that day.
Allahu Akbar! Allahu Akbar! Allahu Akbar! Amen!
And so once again, we have the Arab Spring. We have our brothers in Egypt. They're taking baby steps. Perhaps they're taking two baby steps forward and three baby steps backward. Imam Khomeini came in, he made this statement and expelled the Israelis, closed down their embassy. You have no quarters here anymore. Despite the fact that the Shah of Iran, there was no greater friend to Israel than the Shah of Iran. His top advisors were from the Baha'i faith. The Baha'i faith has its worldwide headquarters in Haifa, Israel. So Imam Khomeini, with the stroke of one decision, you're out of here. And here we have the Islamists in Egypt. They've had control of the government now for well over a year. They haven't even opened the border at Rafah to relieve the pressure and the suffering of their brothers in Gaza. These are their brothers, closer to them. Hamas is an outgrowth of the Ikhwan. You couldn't have brothers which are closer in ideological orientation or in distance. And they haven't had the courage to open up the border to relieve the suffering of their own brothers. That is the difference between an imam and a president. Finally, brothers and sisters, and I'll end with this. With all of this murkiness in the world that we live in today, how was this imam able to see his way so clearly? And we let him speak in his own words. He said, I never experienced for one moment in my life fear. I never experienced fear for one moment in my life. What kind of life is he talking about? This imam was orphaned when he was a few months old. He went to prison. We know what happens in prison. He was forced into exile. 15 years forced into exile. No Muslim country would accept him. And this imam didn't express many regrets, but the one regret he did express is that when he was expelled from Iraq, that no Muslim country accepted him. And so he had to go to France. When he was coming back to the Islamic Republic, his advisors were telling him that this situation is very fluid. It could go out of control. The communists are there, the nationalists are there, the royalists are there, and of course, our enemies in the United States and the Israelis and everybody else is there. We may not be able to protect you. Did this imam have any fear? And the answer to that is no. He came back to his country. I'll relate to you an anecdote from the life of this imam during the 8-year war with that country next door. Again, Saddam Hussein was only an agent. The rest of the world was behind this war that he declared on the Islamic Republic of Iran. And in one of these instances, the imam was having a cabinet meeting with his important ministers. And one of these ministers is relating this incident. And this minister begins by saying that I knew that I was in the company of a very, very special man. And he begins to relate this incident. He said that we were in Tehran, we were having a meeting with the imam. And bombs, we could hear bombs dropping all around us. We could hear the noise of the bombs going off. And on one particular occasion, we heard a bomb fall almost right next to the house that we were having the meeting in. And all of us dispersed. We felt the noise and the vibration of the bomb and we all dispersed. We ran for our lives. Then we came back to where we were having the meeting with the imam, and we saw the imam sitting there as if nothing had happened. But that's when I got the impression that we were in the company of a very, very special man. Allah Ta'ala says, أينما تكونوا يدرككم الموت ولو كنتم في بروج مشيدة. The imam was an embodiment of this ayah. Wherever you may be, you are going to have to encounter death. Even if you are in towers raised high, death is coming. The Imam that spoke before me talked about the presence of fear. This Imam had no fear. The fear of death is written before you do it. The time of your death is written long before you do anything in your life. Whether you're an activist or you're sitting at home watching television, the time of your death is determined. You're going to die at that instant. There are people, soldiers who go to war who come back without an injury. At the same time, there are people sitting in their armchairs at home who never went to war, who die having never gone to war. The fear of death at the hands of those who have no power in the world, and I'm talking about the imperialists and Zionists, they have no power to put you to death. They have no power to do anything to you unless Allah Ta'ala has written a certain harm for you. And if He's written a certain harm for you, there is no power on this earth that can stop it. And if He's not written a certain harm for you, there's no power on this earth that can encourage it. And so go out and do the work that is necessary for justice. And have no fear. And this Imam set an example for us in this regard. This Imam was a superman in the area of Irfan. There was nothing in this world that could cause him to make a decision in the direction of injustice. There was nothing in his character that would cause him to make a decision that would increase the oppression for his people or for the people of the world. And there are people in the world that recognize this. I grew up at a time where I began to learn about this deen just as the Islamic Revolution was happening. I learned about this deen not from books and not from university courses, but from the maturing of this Islamic Revolution inside of this country from where it was never expected. If you were around at that time, you would have never expected that the Islamic Revolution that would lead the Ummah, the Islamic guidance, and the Islamic pulse that would lead the Ummah would come from Iran. In fact, if you happen to belong to the vast majority of Muslims, you would think that this was the last place on earth that would produce this kind of Islamic momentum. And so I learned about Islam as this revolution matured. And I know that you brothers and sisters, especially the young amongst you, that there will be a time where you will have to make a similar choice. Islamic events will be going on all around you. And you will have to decide whether to get on board or whether to sit next to the wall and support the wall of oppression. I hope you make a choice in the way that I did, to support the Imam when he comes. To support the Imam when he is here. We have an Islamic momentum in the world which is being led by the Islamic Republic of Iran. The head of the Islamic Republic is our Imam. Regardless of whether you're Sunni or Shi'i or Ibadi or Wahhabi, it doesn't matter what fiqh you go by. We have an Imam. And if you love Imam Khomeini, then you will support his successor. أقول قولي هذا وأستغفر الله لي ولكم فاستغفروه يغفر لكم فاسترشدوه يرشدكم. Thank you, brothers and sisters. بارك الله فيكم والسلام عليكم ورحمة الله.